Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Not Just Paleo podcast. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the show. This is the second interview with Jimmy Moore, so if you haven't, go listen to the first interview that I did, I'd say probably 4 months ago. You'd have to go check, maybe longer. You know the way time flies. But welcome to the show. Today, we are talking with Jimmy about his new book, Cholesterol Clarity, that is coming out in about a week. So that'll be August 27th, 2013 is when the book is coming out. You can check on Amazon for it to be sure. And it's going to reveal a lot of things that we've been curious about when it comes to cholesterol for a long time. So I hope you enjoy this episode. If you take a couple minutes and head back over to iTunes and write a review for the show, I remind most people every week, but I do appreciate the reviews. It helps with the ranking of the show, and it helps us keep up with the charts and enable this podcast to spread wide and far. I actually looked at the map the other day on this cool program to show where the listeners are, and they're around the world, South Africa and Brazil and Australia. Just, it's a beautiful thing to have this ability to speak with you all. So thanks for being with me today. And if you have any questions or topic request or guest you would like on the show, just send the request over to Evan, E-V-A-N, at notjustpaleo.com. And lastly, just have a good day. Use your willpower to take little steps in the right direction, whether you're trying to beat a food craving, whether you're trying to get a new personal record in the gym, or whether you're just trying to get through the day and you've had a stressful day. Just get through it and keep your head up. And we're in this thing for the long haul together. So enjoy listening and keep up with Jimmy Moore. He's all around the web. So thanks again for listening. Well, hey, everybody. We are back with our second-time guest, Mr. Jimmy Moore, and he is now going to talk about his book today, Cholesterol Clarity, which is mind-blowing in the first 60 pages, which is all I've had to read today. And I'm excited to talk about some of the myths that have been floating around in the health industry for probably 100 years now. So, Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. I didn't realize I was the first second-time guest. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I guess Wendy Myers, she was too. But so you'll be the second. But anyways, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so I am very, very interested in this book, and I have been since you told me about it at PaleoFX, because cholesterol is one of those really confusing and scary topics for people where they don't want to listen to me, even though I probably am right. So now hopefully your book will verify that I'm right on some of these topics.
Well, and anybody that reads the book, Evan, and you know me and my heart with things, I don't want anybody to believe me either.
Yeah.
What I want them to do, and I say this very clearly in the book, I am no expert, and I certainly don't have all the answers, but what I do have is a lot of great expert friends that contributed to this book. I was able to have 29 of the world's foremost authorities on cholesterol to chime in with some moment of clarity quotes all throughout the book. I think that's a pretty unique aspect of this book. And then my co-author, Dr. Eric Westman, who is an MD in Durham, North Carolina at Duke. He co-wrote The New Atkins for a New You, but he's a practitioner and researcher. So he's been out there for several years looking at real people and what really makes them tick as far as their health. And so it's not really predicated really on anything having to do with cholesterol. But unfortunately, people are so obsessed about what their LDL is, what their total cholesterol is, and if it's over 100, over 200 respectively, they're freaking out and they're thinking they have to take a drug that they don't really need to be taking.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been curious about cholesterol ever since I looked at the nutrition label on a pack of eggs, and you see that one egg is about 70% of your daily value of cholesterol. And I can't tell you, Jimmy, how many times I've been questioned about why I'm eating the egg yolks. So I think that would be a good starting point to talk with people about. So tell us about eggs and why are they such a good superfood, basically?
Man, oh man, my favorite quote in the book, one of my favorites anyway, I don't want to tick off all my experts that were quoted in the book, but Chris Masterjohn, who is just a whiz at this whole cholesterol issue, he was talking about how diets that are predominantly egg whites. So all it takes is 5% of your calories to come from egg whites. And you have all of these health conditions that start happening to you. And I think to all those young women out there who are trying to get pregnant and trying to have, you know, optimal health, what are they eating? They're eating Egg White Delight from McDonald's. They're going to, and this one cracks me up, Evan, they're going to Subway and getting an egg white sub with an avocado on it. So that, wait a minute, they're taking the fat and cholesterol out of the egg part, but then they're adding back fat in avocado. It's kind of a weird world we live in.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard Starbucks has some type of egg white sandwich also that
I
want to just go and ask. I wish that, you know, the CEO or somebody in charge just happened to be in there and I could say, hey, man, put the yolk back in, please.
You know, it was funny. Christine and I went and saw Dr. Westman for a photo shoot for this book. And we went up to Durham, North Carolina, and we went. He took us to this place for lunch, and they served breakfast all day. So anyway, on the menu, it said, to remove the egg yolk, it'll cost you 75 cents more. And I went, huh? They're taking the yolk out, and they're charging you 75 cents more just to give you the egg white. I suppose it's the labor of having to separate the white from the yolk. But yeah. I wanted to be a little snarky, but I didn't because my wife was sitting there. But I wanted to be snarky and say, well, if you pay me 75 cents, I'll take all the yolks you have in the back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that is the absolute most nutritious part of the egg. And if more people ate egg yolks, we wouldn't be having cholesterol issues. We wouldn't be having heart disease. We wouldn't have all these issues that are supposedly being brought on by the egg yolk if people just ate egg yolks.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was scrolling through and I was reading that the statin industry and the whole industry behind reducing cholesterol is a $29 billion with a B.
Yep.
Annual profit industry. So,
and rising.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So, I mean, when did all this start? When did the downfall of marketing and all basically tricking society, when did this stuff start happening?
Man, it's a sordid tale. I mean, you can go all the way back to Ansel Keys kind of convincing everybody that this was all about saturated fat and cholesterol clogging arteries. And then there was this whole dissertation about how clogged arteries happen. And I mean, it just goes through the food pyramid when that started. I'm really looking forward to Denise Menger's book coming out later this year that kind of exposes that whole thing. It's all interwoven. And then when the pharmaceutical companies realized they could make money off of lowering cholesterol, well, by golly, they had a paradigm that they could, you know, push on people. So what they did was they went after the doctors first and they started educating, quote unquote, educating the physicians about giving these miracle pills to lower cholesterol. If cholesterol is the grand enemy in heart disease, then by golly, getting cholesterol levels lower and lower and lower by any means necessary is going to be healthy. And that's how they sold it to physicians. Then they started advertising on television and people see, go lower, take Lipitor, take Crestor. And they go to their doctor, ask your doctor. So they do. And guess what? The doctor obediently gives them the prescription for the statin drug. And why are we surprised that there's tens of millions of people on statins?
Right, right. Yeah, I'm sure there's been a lot of fun and expensive golf trips and lobster buffets that
have
happened.
Oh, wow.
In this.
Yeah, Dr. William Davis, who is the author of Wheat Belly, he was one of my experts in the book. And yeah, he gave me all the sordid details. You'll have to read one of his quotes because
really,
he talked all about the things that they threw at him, trying to get him to be a spokesperson for the statin drug industry. I'm like, do you know who you're talking to there? Wow. He's not going to do that.
Wow. Well, that's good. That's good to know that, though. Insider information like that's important to make our case stronger in trying to get support and rally up support to continue people on a higher saturated fat diet. So I think something that we should talk about,
yep,
which I'm sure is in your book. I haven't got to it yet. Cholesterol is not actually the problem alone, but it's when cholesterol interferes and combines with inflammation in the body is when the problem happens. Is that right?
Right. You said you read the first 60 pages. So chapter 2 actually deals with inflammation, and that starts on page 37. And yeah, we hit that one square between the eyeballs. Absolutely. Inflammation. You cannot have heart disease without an inflammation. And so if you stop the inflammatory foods, which I'll go ahead and clue you into it, it's not fat, or at least it's not the fat that you think it is. It's not the saturated fat. It's the vegetable oils, and it's obviously the carbohydrates that are causing the most damage and leading to that inflammation.
Okay, and so stress is one of the big things.
Yep.
And what else leads to inflammation?
Man, anything that will oxidize your LDL, and that's a big part of this book as well. I want people to understand it's a complex topic, Evan, mm-hmm. to try to explain to people that don't even know what LDL and HDL mean. But even people in our community who do understand this stuff, it can get a little bit tricky with the wording. So what we tried to do in Cholesterol Clarity was just break it all down. Okay, this is a term. Now, if you're unsure about what this term means, we've got a glossary in the back of the book that helps you understand it. So, yeah, there's so many things that could cause inflammation. It really runs the gamut. Stress is a big one. Obviously, very poor diet, sugar, anything that would turn to sugar in the body, those kind of things are going to cause inflammation. And then those vegetable oils, which ironically are pushed because they do a very good job of one thing that the establishment thinks is a good thing. They lower cholesterol. But you know what they do in the process of lowering that cholesterol is they oxidize the LDL much quicker than anything else, which leads to the heart attacks. And yeah, it's just bad news. In fact, I've got one chapter in the book talks about carbs and vegetable oils being the twin villains.
Wow. So actually, I mean, in your own mind, or I guess, you know, if you believe the mainstream or you've just kind of been brainwashed, I hate to say it, but if you've been brainwashed, you're thinking that trying to get that number down is a good thing. You're actually helping yourself out. But it seems like, I think we might have talked about scales and weight last time you were on the Yep. podcast. Numbers doesn't seem to be that much of a good biomarker. But I guess where do numbers come into this whole thing?
Well, and numbers, this is a key too with cholesterol. Everybody talks about go lower, go lower, go lower. But chapter 13, I have a whole chapter where I talk about why cholesterol levels can get too low, and that's a bad thing. In fact, again, Chris Masterjohn was the home run hitter in that chapter, talking about all these conditions that happen to you when you have cholesterol levels below 150. So all these people taking statin drugs, and one of the most famous ones is Tim Russert, the NBC anchor for Meet the Press, and he died of a heart attack at a very early age, and his cholesterol level was 105.
Wow.
And he was taking statin drugs, and he was eating a low-fat diet. He was exercising. He was doing all the quote-unquote right things, and yet he died. How could this happen? On paper, he looked like the picture of health. So if that alone doesn't tell you that LDL and total cholesterol really don't tell you the whole story with heart disease, I don't know what will. And in fact, one of my other experts, Stephanie Seneff, she noted that the people who have cholesterol in their arteries, that's actually acting as a protective mechanism where the inflammation is. It's trying to protect you so that if you do have coronary artery disease start to develop, it's trying to prevent that from happening. But wow. People see the cholesterol and they think, oh, the cholesterol is the enemy. The cholesterol is like the firefighter who just shows up to the scene of the fire. They didn't start the fire. They're trying to put it out.
That's incredible. So I guess the first step, Jimmy, if we want to talk about some of the simple ways that people can figure out their own cholesterol, it always goes back to testing, I guess. So I quickly skimmed through everything, so I don't remember too much of the details. But I remember seeing a test that you said is very rare, but people need to get. What is that?
There's several tests in the book that I said were kind of rare. But one thing that's really important is to not put a lot of stock in your basic cholesterol. Now, you can extrapolate some information from that basic cholesterol test that basically will give you your LDL-C, your HDL-C, your VLDL, your total cholesterol, and sometimes they'll throw in this thing called non-HDL cholesterol. We explain all of that in the book. But and you can extrapolate, and triglycerides is the other one. You can extrapolate information from those numbers, but unless you're actually measuring the LDL particles, that's a big one. I think it's just really important to have the NMR lipoprofile test run. It's a test out of North Carolina, and it actually measures the size and the number of your LDL particles. And so that's a big one. That's one I think that you might be referring to with your with the rare test, because you ask your doctor about NMR lipoprofile and he's going to ask you about what alphabet soup you just ate.
Right.
he's probably not going to know. Some know, but most probably don't. So if you ask for it, they should be able to run it. I also in the book provide various websites where you can have it run yourself without a doctor. But it's essential to know what size your LDL is, because if it's predominantly the small dense kind, you're in trouble. You got to do something. You got to make changes in your diet. Doesn't mean you need a statin, but it does need, it does mean that you need to do something in your diet to make that shift to the more large fluffy. Now there is arguments as well, and we put this in the book too, about whether it's the size of the LDL particle or if it's the LDL number of LDL particles in your blood that's important. And I show both sides of that debate so people can decide for themselves. But it's certainly something worth looking into if you're concerned about your numbers. Get that LDL particle size test done, and you'll know exactly whether you're truly at risk or not. Now, there's a lot of other tests that you can have run, from CRP and testing your blood sugar, getting a CT heart scan done. I mean, there's really – we tried to do a really good job of leading people, okay – you got a bad result. It's no big deal. How about this? Now try this. Now try this. And if you go through all those tests and you still are in bad shape, then maybe you should consider, you know, taking some medication. But that's the last resort.
Yeah.
You want to try to exhaust all the things first and to truly see if you're at risk. Most people see a 200 cholesterol. Oh, my gosh, I'm 200 cholesterol. I'm going to have a heart attack tomorrow. And yet traditional Paleolithic time peoples, their cholesterol levels were naturally a lot higher. For women, it was around 250. And for guys, it was around 225 to 230. So that's considerably higher than what we think is normal. And yet that was normal in traditional times. Now, obviously, we don't eat the diet of our traditional peoples anymore. But those numbers can hold true if we do get back to that diet of our ancestors.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that the paleo diet always comes through as the winner for figuring out all these, I guess we would call them Neolithic diseases.
Yep.
Yeah, one of the little golden nuggets, I call it, that I found in your book was that 15% of cholesterol consumed through your diet is absorbed. And that's it. 15%.
Yep. That was from Dr. Peter Attia. I actually saw him give a talk in San Diego earlier this year, and I was in the midst of writing this book, and he said that quote, and I went, oh, my gosh, I got to write that down.
Yeah.
That was really good information, because a lot of people fear eating those egg yolks we were talking about earlier because of their very high cholesterol content. But what Dr. Attia is saying is we're not really absorbing very much of that cholesterol in our body, so why are we so fearful?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you hope that the goal of this book is going to be, and what do you hope the reach is going to be, or what do you predict, I guess, for, say, the next 5 years?
Yeah, you know, I have some hopes and dreams with this book. I wrote it, number one, with just average everyday people in mind. I wanted to reach those people who don't know what LDL is. They don't know what HDL is. They don't really care, to be honest. But they've been bamboozled into thinking that everything is predicated on what their cholesterol numbers are. And I'm hoping that cholesterol clarity provides an alternative hypothesis that they'll take a look at that and say, maybe what I've been told isn't right after all. And so that's number one target market. Number two target market is obviously people in the paleo and low carb and real food and ancestral community who already kind of understand this, but need a resource to give to friends and family who don't understand this stuff, because I know they know this stuff probably as well as I do. But we also provided moment of clarity quotes from these 29 experts plus my co-author that will be a little more advanced. So it's not a total, oh, well, I know all that stuff, Jimmy. I don't need to get that book. No, get the book, because you're going to find some things in those moment of clarity quotes that you probably didn't know, like you just read from Dr. Atiyah. So that's target market number two. And then a big one is the doctors and the nurses and the dietitians who are stuck in conventional wisdom, Evan. I feel like if they are given a resource that's easy to understand, it's a 250-something page book, so it's not very long. They can pick it up, read it, grasp it, and perhaps for the first time in their careers, read something that challenges the very paradigm of everything they've been telling their patients and clients for so many years. I mean, it's amazing. That conference I went to in San Diego was a obesity conference of a bunch of doctors, and I started talking to a few of them about my book, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's a book I've been wanting to try to, you know, find to give to my patients. Can we order 100 of them to start, you know, passing out to patients to help educate them? So it's definitely a resource that I think the time has come for, and I'm just honored to be able to put it out there and see what happens. You said the next 5 years, I think, you know, big things could happen, especially if this thing takes off like we think it will. I think it has the great potential to hit the New York Times bestseller. And if it does that, then it hits a whole new stratosphere of eyeballs that probably would not have paid attention to it otherwise.
Yeah, Jimmy, something that is standing out to me, which stood out to me our first podcast together, is the passion in your voice for this stuff. So I just want to tell you, man, I really do appreciate this, because this is such a rare opportunity in the whole existence of humans to be able to have this much power among just, you know, kind of just random Joes like you and I, who just became passionate and became research advocates. And I mean, we're in a powerful time right now. So I just thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, man. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what you think the first step towards better health is when it comes to cholesterol. If I'm someone who just now started listening to this podcast and I have a, say, 50% paleo diet, what's the next thing I do?
You know what the biggest thing I tell Evan, tell people, Evan, is stop fearing fat.
Yeah.
I think if we get over our fat phobia and start embracing real whole food sources of fat, lard, butter, coconut oil, ghee, all of these things that we know are healthy, and yet the vast majority of people out there, you go to the grocery store and what's 90% of what should be the butter section? It's margarine. Well, they don't put 90% of the shelf full of stuff that people aren't buying. They're buying that crap.
Right.
And, you know, just getting people to get over this fear of fat. And what's the fear of fat predicated on? I'm going to raise my LDL. I'm going to raise my total cholesterol. And if it goes above 200, I'm at great risk for heart disease, having a heart attack, stroke, or death. Now, this is personal to me too, Evan. I dedicate this book to my brother, Kevin, who most of my listeners and most of the people who follow me know, died at the age of 41. Mm-hmm. He was morbidly obese, had heart disease, diabetes, all of these conditions of health that were totally preventable, but he was given the wrong advice. He was told to eat oatmeal for breakfast with no butter on it, and he was told to drink glasses of orange juice, and he was told to do this and that that was totally the opposite of what he needed to be doing. So you're darn right I'm passionate about this, because I have a personal vested interest in it, in a brother, my only full-blooded brother, that died from basically doing all the advice that was the opposite of what I talk about now. And it's the conventional wisdom that's killing people day after day after day.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious, Jimmy. Do you watch any kind of TV, doctor shows, or anything like that?
Occasionally, I'll do the Dr. Oz show just when he has an interesting, you know, guest on or something like that. But honestly, no, because I'm so disgusted by their lack of even trying. I mean, especially these TV doctors. They don't even seem to be trying to learn, you know, about these alternative paradigms.
Right.
They're just so stuck in conventional wisdom. And of course, you look at the TV commercials of Dr. Oz, and I've seen the doctors a couple of times, but I mean, you watch those shows and then watch their commercials. It's all grain companies.
Wow.
So they have a vested interest in keeping their, you know, sponsors really happy. So they're not going to bring on somebody that says, yeah, grains are the devil and they're going to clog your arteries and they're the true culprit in inflammation and heart disease. Yeah, the sponsor wouldn't like that too well.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. Well, hopefully we can still make a change. I really do think that the alternative power that we're having now with podcasts such as my podcast and your podcast and others out there, I do think that we're kind of experiencing the wave. I was just browsing the other day just to be curious about like TV ratings and stuff like that. Yeah. And just for people curious, TV ratings are kind of plummeting and the whole industry is basically freaking out because of the internet and podcasts, radio shows, and different stuff like that. So I think 2013 is maybe the year that we actually do start to become a critical mass.
Well, it is pretty amazing when you look on the iTunes health charts. I remember when I first started podcasting, which was 2006, it was me and Sean Croxton.
Wow.
And today, you look at the top 100, and I believe paleo, low-carb, real food, advocates, those kind of podcasts, we dominate the charts.
Yeah.
And you're a part of that. And, of course, I could sit here and name all the different podcasts that are a part of that, but it's a good, you know, 40 to 50 solid podcasts that are putting out quality information and giving these alternative views on things like cholesterol, you know, people are listening. And that's a very encouraging sign as we move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there something that we should look for if, you know, say somebody is just not going to take the time to do testing? I don't know, whether they're lazy or whatever it is. Is there anything that you can experience where you would know that something is wrong with you when it comes to cholesterol? Or is that something that's mainly long term?
Yeah, I mean, there are doctors out there, especially ones that I interviewed for my book, that said, stop measuring your cholesterol. It's really not telling you anything anyway. It's basically convincing you need to take a drug in the end. If you're going to test triglycerides. That's probably a good marker to test. Test your blood sugar. I've heard that one as well. That was one we quoted in the book. You know, if you truly want to see if anything's going on, if you have actual disease, I've been giving a talk on nutritional ketosis over the past year where I've been testing my blood ketones and blood sugar and all that. And one of the things I say in one of the slides is it's time we stop treating numbers on paper and start actually treating disease. And the disease, you can actually see disease. And one of the chapters in the book, we tell you what you can do. If you're still worried about your high cholesterol, you can get a CT heart scan. You can get a carotid artery scan. I mean, there's different ways of seeing if actual disease is happening to you. But I think it's good to know your numbers, Evan. I think if you know where you stand and you don't really let it freak you out regardless. I mean, I have some pretty high cholesterol levels, total cholesterol over 300. But I have certain elements of my health markers that are just unbelievably good. So do I throw the baby out with the bathwater with those numbers being good and yet LDL-C and total cholesterol being so high? I don't think so.
Right. Yeah, how strict was your diet when you were doing the whole ketosis journey testing? I mean, do you kind of cycle between certain ratios of food, or what's it look like for you?
You know, during the experiment itself, I pretty much stayed 80% fat, 80 to 85% fat, 12 to 15% protein, and around 3 to 5% carbohydrate, because I was doing it as an experiment to see what would happen being in that constant state of ketosis. Now, that ended in May. So since then, I've been trying to reintroduce, you know, varying levels of protein, varying levels of carbohydrate. And Evan, here's the dirty secret. I can't do it.
Really?
I got to stick with that really strict. And I think that's an eye opener for a lot of people because they think, well, once you, you know, get down in weight and get adapted and you can reintroduce carbohydrate and protein and all these things. No, I can't. I think all those years of being over 400 pounds, this is my payday that I have to kind of stick with a pretty strict regimen. And I'm cool with that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I tell people I've had all the carbs I'm allowed to have in my lifetime in the first 32 years of my life. So.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. I mean, what happens for you? Do you get joint pain or just fatigue, brain fog? What usually happens?
Well, the first thing I noticed is blood sugar rises.
Okay.
And weight gain. And, yeah, little aches and pains that weren't there before. And it's not that I'm eating grains or anything like that, but just adding in, you know, things just to kind of test the water, you know, things like starchy carbohydrates, you know, try the whole, you know, the whole sweet potato or something like that to see how I do. And I don't do well. So it's a neat experiment. I really wish more people took a vested interest in their own health that way so they can see how their body responds. Because unfortunately, I can't tell you how your body's going to respond. Right. You're going to have to test it. You're going to test your blood sugar, blood ketones, test your blood pressure. I mean, just kind of do all the little things you can do at home. How you look, feel, and perform, as Rob Wolf always says. You know, all of those things are important. Your sleep, cortisol levels, all of those things come into play.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask, what does an 85% fat diet look like? I mean, can you go through a day real quick and just tell us what it's like?
You know, it's interesting because I actually wrote a blog post on carbsmart.com about that, 12 high-fat foods that you can include on your nutritional ketosis. So it's things like avocados, it's full-fat meats and cheeses, it's eggs, obviously. I love fish oil. One that surprises a lot of people because they think it's sugary, but it's actually very high in fat, and especially a real healthy fat, stearic acid, is dark chocolate. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to Ancestral Health Symposium last year in Boston, and there was this local company, chocolate company there called Taza, and I went, okay, this looks cool. So I tried it, and it had little bits of cacao nibs in it.
Yeah.
And, oh, that was like the best chocolate ever.
Yeah.
And I think I tried the 70, and it was too sweet. And I tried the 80, and it was pretty good. I've now advanced up to about 87% because my taste buds have become so attuned to any sweetness that it doesn't take a whole lot of sugar. So that the sugar content of that one specifically is extremely low, and, of course, it's very high in fat. So that would be another fat source. You know, really any real whole food fat source, coconut oil and coconut, those kind of things are just a staple of your diet. Now, what I find, Evan, is I can eat one meal of those kinds of foods, and I may be satisfied for 8, 10, 12, 16, even 24 hours sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to interrupt you, but I was just over here just dreaming about the dark chocolate bar that I posted yesterday, and it was an 88% dark chocolate, and I had it with strawberries, and I started to think the same thing, 72 yeah. and stuff like that's just too sweet. But honestly, I mean, people may think that when you hear the word experiment and diet or experiment yeah. in food in the same sentence, your automatic response is, oh my God, Jimmy's probably miserable, but it sounds like you were living a pretty damn pleasurable life eating that diet.
Oh my gosh, Evan, if I knew, and what's funny is I was already eating pretty low carbs, so that didn't change. The big shift for me was moderating down the protein amount that I was eating and upping the fat. I think even though I'm not fearful of fat, we all in the back of our minds say, you can't have as much fat as you want because it's too many calories. You know, we have those messages that kind of speak to us
yeah.
in our head because we've had it hammered into us for so long, low fat is healthy, low fat is healthy, low fat is healthy, that when we start to lower carbs, we think, okay, well, if lower carb is good, then surely lower fat, lower carb is better. And that's a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah. What are some of the meat swaps, I guess you could call it, that you would do when you're trying to switch, say, to lower your protein but to up your fat? What are you excluding?
Oh, you're definitely not eating chicken. I mean, if you love chicken and that's cool and you're okay with that big, you know, amount of protein that you get from chicken. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about chicken breasts. Obviously, that's a no-no. Never, ever have skinless, boneless chicken breasts. That's 99% fat-free, and it's just not good for you. And so, yeah, that's off limits. Turkey, really any of the lean meats, those aren't good sources of protein or fat. They're good sources of protein, which is what you're trying to moderate. So, you know, choose the fattier cuts. Get a good grass-fed beef and eat that. You can have lamb, bison, you know, and then add fat to those meats as well. You know, people that, you know, I'll put butter or coconut oil on top of my steak, Evan, and that freaks some people out. And I'm like, well, you're sitting there putting sugary sauce on top of it. What's the, I'm going to put my sauce, and it's a fatty sauce.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I noticed, Jimmy, since I got down here in Austin, bison is everywhere. I guess there's some huge ranches around here because bison was not available in Kentucky. If it was, it was very rare here. It's not uncommon at all to see somebody bringing in bison burgers and stuff like that. So I've been enjoying the change of meat, getting off steak for a little bit and getting onto bison. It's delicious stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, you just kind of have to, if you are somebody who's kind of grossed out by food, and I understand, you know, the whole process behind killing an animal and stuff is always sensitive for some people, but if you can get past that and venture out past your normal, I guess you would call them American meats, and start getting into these alternate meats such as organs, bison, and stuff like that. Do you ever mess with anything crazy like tongue or anything?
I had tongue about a year ago. It freaked Christine, my wife, out.
Yeah.
She's like, what did you bring home? Because it's like this tongue sticking out in the refrigerator. It's like, she's like, what did you bring home? I said, honey, that's a cow tongue. And she's like, ew. I said, no, it's supposed to be pretty good. So I cooked it up in a crock pot. I put a lot of seasoning and things in the water and basically boiled it all night on a low boil and split it open the next morning. They had all this nice shredded meat come out of the middle. It was wonderful.
Really?
But the whole idea just freaked Christine out. I had to load it up with blueberries and all of these things. It was just pretty amazing.
Yeah.
She was just,
Yeah. Do you have any organ meats in your diet right now?
It's very hard for me to find it. My farm that we used to get stuff like that from, they shut down. So I've had trouble finding a new source of those kind of things. I realize there's places online, U.S. Wellness Meats and different ones, but I try to support local as much as possible. Still searching for that. But yeah, I've tried beef heart. That's not for the faint of heart either. All pun intended. Liver as well. I'm a little averse to kidney just because you know what kidneys do. It's kind of hard to stick that in your mouth. But I'm experimenting with those kind of things. And, of course, bone broth is not something that that I'm averse to either.
Yeah, I was curious to know because you always read research about how often you should have organ meats and different things in your diet. Do you have any numbers offhand from what you've seen?
With the liver, I know Chris Kresser, when I had him on my podcast talking about getting pregnant and stuff, he was saying it only took about twice a week, just a little sliver, those little pellets that he tells you to cut them up into. Have you ever done that where you cut the liver up into little frozen pills and then you just eat the pills?
Oh, really? Just swallow them?
Yeah, just eat them frozen.
Wow.
Yeah, that way you get or you can chop it up into your ground beef. It really doesn't take a whole lot because those things are so nutrient dense. You can get a lot of nutrition in a very small package of those organ meats.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, Jimmy, I'm curious to know what your multitasking ability and your stress management and all that that's been happening. I mean, I know you've been super busy every time I talk to you or email you, you're working on this book. So, I mean, are you at a point of a sigh of relief yet? Or what's that part like?
It's a different stress coming on now because now I'm promoting the book. And yeah, I mean, I've never been one of these people that stresses out. I know some of my fellow Victory Belt authors have given me their horror stories of, oh, I needed a vacation after writing the book. And I'm going, okay, it was a tough little process, but it's not that bad. I suppose I just handle things like that. I just don't really get too bogged down by them. And in the end, I know the end result's going to be a lot of people, hopefully, will be changed and their lives and health will improve from reading my book.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's great. I was just curious because I know that it's easy to get overwhelmed and then you may end up sacrificing your own sanity to, help others.
I can tell you last year I had a wake up call because it was Sean Croxton and Diane Sanfilippo and a couple of other people said, dude, you podcast 5 days a week. Back away from the podcast and nobody will get hurt. Yeah. So, that you know, I never took a break. And that's when I was dealing with the little bit of weight gain that led me down the nutritional ketosis path. And they were the ones that said, hey, take a break. Don't feel bad about it. And so I did. And I've started to, you know, do that and purposefully take time off. I've taken off the last couple weeks here before the recording of this. And I'm taking off the whole month of November and December. You know, you got to do those things. And it keeps you sane. And it keeps your health in order. You know, it's kind of ironic that people in the health world run themselves so hard because they're so passionate about this that they forget about their own health in the process of trying to help other people with their health. So it's a little bit of ironic there.
Yeah, that's what Beverly Meyer, she was telling me that, you know, she had to take a break too just because she yep. was getting so overwhelmed. I think it's kind of funny because when you're looking from the outside in, you're thinking that all of us podcasters and bloggers were just this unlimited potential energy just because we're, you know, eating a ton of delicious Kerrygold butter, but at the same time that, you know, we're still human too. And I do still try to remind people that I'm not 24/7. I do take time to chill out. You should too.
Oh yeah.
Don't try to cram too much stuff into your life. Like I talked yesterday with somebody and I was telling them, how much silence do you have in your life? I think that's something that kind of seems to be shorthanded with all the information that we're trying to consume, because we are at a critical point now to where we do need to start changing the health of our country, but or the planet, literally. But at the same time, there's only a limited amount of willpower and hours in the day. So I guess it's just the message I'm trying to make here is that it's important to try to balance those things out.
Absolutely. And it's a tricky balance because on the one hand, you have a passion for getting the message out, which is why I started 3 podcasts that air 5 days a week and a blog and a forum and writing books and, you know, all the things that I try to do and being active on Twitter and Google Plus and Facebook. You know, you do all those things with an end mind and when you're doing it, you're like, okay, this is good. But then you don't realize very slowly you start to feel a little weaker, and that's the time you need to back away. And so, yeah, it's good to be reminded of that. And I was very appreciative of Sean and Diane for kind of slapping some sense into me last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I was being a stalker here on your Facebook page and saw that you were posting something about your mother being in the hospital. Do you care to educate us about what's going on there? And is there anything that we can do in that? Or,
well, at this point, they're just trying to figure out what it is. They think it is viral meningitis, but they haven't ruled out like West Nile virus. I mean, it could literally be anything freaky. I mean, a bug could have bit her and she got whatever this is. But it was a shock because, you know, suddenly she was overnight in the hospital and, you know, and she couldn't talk. She couldn't recognize anybody. It was like this onset of dementia that just suddenly hit her. Yeah, it was freaky. And then I talked to her the next night and she had a kind of a belabored kind of talking. So I'd say, you know, hey, mom. And she'd be like, hi. How are you? And it was just kind of, I mean, it was shocking because I've never heard her talk that way before. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the happy thoughts and the prayers. As of the recording of this, we don't know, you know, everything. They're going to get tests back and hopefully they'll do it. They do have her on 3 antibiotics just to, as a preliminary thing in case it's a bacterial infection of some sort. But, at this point, we just don't know. And, it's one of those things that you just never know. Be as healthy as you can be because you never know when these kind of things are going to hit you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so this happened like overnight, you're saying?
Yeah. She was, well, my sister said that she was kind of showing symptoms of it for a few days and then it got really bad and they took her to the emergency room and that's when they found out what they think it is. Yeah.
Wow. So how old is she?
She's mid 60s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she's not old at all. But yeah, she shouldn't be dealing with something like this.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We definitely sending good vibes your way, Jimmy. But I just think that that's – I just wanted to bring that up because I saw that, and I saw it was a hugely popular thing you posted, and then it just always kind of – something that always pops out in my mind when I hear stories or things going on like that is just to try to enjoy every moment you do have and – not to have a negative mindset on the world, but this could be the last time that you and I speak together.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it so much, and I just want that to be a reoccurring theme, hopefully with your audience as well as my audience, just to enjoy the moments that you do have. Because when we are in such a rush trying to fix ourselves, help others, maintain a job, that's something that I've got a couple emails about lately is how am I supposed to keep up with all this information and fix my health and keep up with a job? And I tell them it's not easy, but just to enjoy every moment that you do have. And when you do have a delicious grass-fed steak, to savor that bad boy, because you never know.
Yeah, I love that living in the moment thing. And it's another reason why I don't get too worked up about critics and things like that. People are like, aren't you ever going to respond? I'm like, you know what? Life's too short. Yeah. I don't really care to respond because I've got too much good work to be doing to be bogged down by the trolls out there who have nothing better to do than to criticize me for this or that or whatever.
Right. Well, Jimmy, I think you're doing great things, and I hope to be on the path with you to make a big change, because it's about time that we have a greater mass. I feel like we've kind of been all talking to each other in the same classroom at school, and now we need to branch out of this school and, you know, infiltrate the others.
Are we the nerds in the class?
Yeah.
We need to go talk to the jocks.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's funny.
Which, you know, I'm at a funny time now in my life, being in my 20s, because I still look around that most people, not that I know, I don't know any other 22-year-olds that are doing a podcast talking about cholesterol and eating eggs. So hopefully this thing continues to grow and I can convince people to, you know, in my age group, generally speaking, put down the vodka and orange juice and pick up, say, I don't know, a green smoothie or something.
Yeah, you will reach people, Evan, that I'll never reach as a 41-year-old, because I'm an old man compared, you know, and so some of your peers might listen to you where they would never listen to me or some of the others in this community that are older.
Right, right. Awesome, Jimmy. Well, please tell us what else you want to leave us with. If there's anything else on your mind, tell me now.
Anything on your mind, yeah. Tell me now. Now, just help me get the word out about Cholesterol Clarity, because I do think it's a paradigm-shifting book. I subtitled it, What the HDL is Wrong with My Numbers, because I want people to be, I guess, capture their attention right away. Mm-hmm. What's that about? You know, and the little play on words. I'm trying to make it fun for people. So if people pick up the book because of the title and then start really reading it, I really think it could change the lives of people and perhaps shift the way we think about cholesterol in this nation and around the world. That would be the ultimate dream. So tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your doctor about this book. In fact, I would even encourage, give your doctor a copy of the book. And you never know. They may start changing their minds about what they think about cholesterol. And when they figure out what the HDL is wrong with your numbers, maybe they can actually help you.
Yeah, Jimmy, this might be something I should mention off air, but I'll go ahead and say it because I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think creating a one-page free cheat sheet or something like that that we can distribute around to where people don't have to purchase the whole book, just give them a couple little golden nuggets and put them on a paper, and then we could just distribute those wide and far. I'll go make them stickers, and I'll go put them up on telephone poles. You know, I don't care at this point.
Yeah, there actually is graphic in the back of the book that does just that. It's a cheat sheet of these are the tests that are important. This is what they should be. So yeah, we include that information in the book. Perhaps I can see if the publisher will let me put that on a website somewhere to make it available, because it is a great resource as an educational piece, because unfortunately we have been so propagandized and misinformed about what cholesterol really means that it's time for the truth to get out there.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Jimmy, thanks so much to take the time to talk with me again, man. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Evan. He acts like it's all good, yeah, like everything's cool. Kiss a girl and then he leaves her.
She doesn't have a clue that he's terrible news. Why I'm in the tire, got to watch out, girl. Don't wanna see her by her eyes out, girl. Cause I've been watching, you've been hurting. Let me be the one that loves you better. Yeah, so many guys have been trying to impress you, but they can love you, girl, like I do. So if you want me, you got me, girl, as long as